Hello, and welcome to the Shotgun Sportsman, a podcast about handgun hunting brought to you by Handgun Hunters International. My name is Ryan Hoover, and I'm your host. I believe handgun hunting is the most rewarding way to hunt, and it's something I want to share with as many people as I can. If you are at all interested in getting your own game meat, I want to challenge you to a way of hunting that is good for both your spirit and your body, so you can become the confident, self-reliant person you were meant to be. Okay, on today's episode, we're going to round out by talking about the third in a series of three competitions that are held in Wyoming, starting Father's Day weekend and going through that next week into the next weekend. And this one is about the MOA competition, the MOA shoot. We talked to co-director Dan Meserve about this shoot, and it's another good one. And if you could make the trip up there, you get to shoot three really quality handgun competitions in a row within a week and a half or so. And then you're also next to some really fantastic Americana and American monuments like Mount Rushmore, Sturgis, etc. So I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Dan Meserve. Dan Meserve, thank you so much for doing the podcast with me today. I'm glad to have you.
I appreciate the invitation, Ryan. Thank you.
Absolutely. So you've been involved with MOA for quite a while now. You are a co-director. And can you just kind of briefly run down what the MOA shoot is and where it's held?
The MOA shoot is a long-range target match for specialty pistols. We hold it at Sundance, Wyoming, on a ranch there about 10 miles south of town. We shoot paper-face targets scored electronically with a shot marker target system, 500, 750, and 1,000 yards. If we use standard NRA faces on those targets of 100-yard simulation, 200-yard simulation targets, and we have shoot the same targets through with different firearms, that those will be our courses of fire, as it would be called. Light gun is what we call our light gun category, is 15-inch barrel, not counting your brake, 7.5 pounds total weight. It can be shot off of a rest or sandbags or bag pod, however you want. Our hunter class category is 15-inch barrel length, and you have to shoot it off of either three sandbags or a conventional bipod. Can't use a rest, can't use an F-class bipod. All our courses of fire are shot strictly from a bench because we're trying to see what kind of good groups you can shoot. Course of fire, we go through three times, five shot group, you get to take some cider shots, and then the first time through you get 5 minutes of your cider shots, and then 5 minutes for five shots for record on paper, and we average three groups, and from that average we move people to the final, like heats out of a race.
Okay. So MOA is the third competition in like a week and a half of handgun competitions held in Wyoming. And unfortunately, it's the only one I haven't been to, but I hope to make it someday. So it sounds to me like, you know, the HHC and the Y-Shot competitions are about really challenging yourself. And the MOA is also to some degree because there's a lot of skill involved, but you are also really checking the capabilities of your gun as well. Is that correct?
You're stretching your capabilities. I'll jokingly say, you know, when a person's out shooting groups, they always shoot, you know, three or four really good ones and have that one that goes out and ruins what we were trying to do. The MOA shoot, we're strictly a competition for accuracy. Mm-hmm. We feel that we evolved out of target shooters, and accuracy is supreme to us.
So MOA is a handgun, a single shot handgun. And this started in conjunction with that company, correct?
Correct. The MOA single shot handgun, a Fallen Block Action, was made by Richard Mertz. They were based out of Ohio for many years, and they would come out west and shoot prairie dogs, both in testing, you know, the gun's ability and their ability as shooters. The original guys in the 90s were the very top flight of IHMSA competition shooters. And with the MOA pistols at that time were the, dominant gun in with Thompson Contenders in production category of IHMSA. Richard Murch moved to Wyoming in 2005 and was looking for, you know, another venue or avenue. And they started this long range match at 500 yards with a, you know, conventional single shot pistol and stretched things out to, you know, 500, 750 and 1,000 yards as an avenue to help further what they could do with single shot pistols, and has really helped the evolution of what we know with modern accuracy with a handgun.
Absolutely. And just for those listening who don't know what Dan's referring to with the IHMSA is the International Handgun Metallic Silhouette Association. It is a competition that unfortunately is a shadow of what it once was, where handgunners shoot steel animals at various ranges. And it was responsible in conjunction with a lot of things back in the day for getting handgun hunting really, really going. And the MOA pistol, let's talk a minute about that, because that's an interesting concept. You, like you said, it's a falling block single shot. Typically, it's, I mean, pretty much you can chamber almost whatever you want in it, because it can be rifle calibers or handgun calibers, and it's capable of great accuracy. Just as an aside, what's the state of the MOA these days?
The MOA base handguns that people use are still some of the MOA pistols, custom XP100s, or, you know, using a single shot bolt gun based on a undesignated 700 action.
Right.
The Nosler pistols have really made great inroads. The new Nosler M48s are remarkably accurate. And Bob Baker has come down and participated with these Freedom Arms single shots.
Oh, yeah.
And has made himself quite competitive. Encores, everybody uses basically what you have, and all firearms types and single shots are used there.
So just correct me if I'm wrong, but the MOA is no longer in production. Is that correct?
The MOA is no longer in production. Richard retired, sold the company, and unfortunately they're no longer in production, as neither are, you know, Thompson Contenders and Encore from the factory. You know, it's good to see SSK come out with a new SSK 50 action, and there's a lot of custom barrel manufacturers. The MOA shoot has actually been won before with Encore.
Oh, wow.
So whatever a person has, their, you know, their ability to use it becomes one of the big driving factors there.
For sure. I want to take a minute to talk about something that the MOA is really good at busting myths, because, you know, when I was a custom gun builder, I would get a lot of questions about barrel length in rifles that I was building and handguns. And it just goes to show that barrel length has nothing to do with accuracy. And the fact that you guys are shooting out to 1,000 yards for groups with handguns that have barrels no longer than 15 inches just should demonstrate to anybody the capability of a handgun in general. And then what I always say is I've never met anybody that can outshoot their handgun, you know, as far as distance is concerned. Most handguns are capable, more capable than the shooters. But can you tell me, so what you said, 500, 750, and 1,000, what size groups are usually in the top, you know, 5 or 10 of your competition?
I'll say with, and I'll caveat here also, I forgot to mention previously, our heavy gun class, we use an 18-inch barrel. And
okay.
Using what you had mentioned, the group sizes really aren't substantially different between the 15 and 18-inch barrels. I've gone back through our records, going back 5 years, are available on our website, moalongrangeshoot.com. If a person historically has been able to hold about a minute of angle at distance, that's competitive at the match. You know, you get a gun that's half minute, you know, half inch group at 100 yards or something like that, of caliber, a BR or a Creedmoor or caliber that's capable of reaching distance. Typically, we run 1 minute of angle groups are competitive. The winning groups tend to run, you know, smaller 5/8 of a minute or half a minute. You know, we have had some spectacular groups fired individually, but the average is sub-minute angle will win. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to matter that the 15-inch, the 18-inch barrels, it's your ability to read conditions and operate your firearm.
Right, exactly. Put that in perspective. A 5 to 6 inch group at 1,000 yards is really good.
Well, and that would be spectacular. Typically, the 1,000 yards one was something toward an 8 or 10
still.
Inch group, but that's still.
Yeah.
Our target is 42 inches, mm-hmm. at 1,000 yards. It's the big target on NOA paper, but wind shifts, mirage shifts, the change, you know, as mirage alters what you see and not, you know, is not the same as where the bullseye actually is. Keeping all the shots on paper is what's important, because we penalize you if it's a 5-shot group. If you have 4 on paper, that other one we consider the worst possible miss. So we add a 42-inch penalty to it.
Mm.
If a person shoots, you know, foot and a half group 3 times, 15, 18 inches, well, you're going to get a seat at the final out of that, because you don't have any penalty points. Wind shifts, mirage shifts make a big important part of what we suffer through.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point, because, you know, you talk about an 8-inch group at 1,000 yards being, you know, very, very top echelon competitor. But that's not shot in a vacuum, right? I mean, like you're saying, all these conditions have to be read, and it takes experience to do that and a good spotter. So like you're saying, to be able to know that your conditions can shift from one shot to the other and still be able to make groups like that with a handgun, with a pistol, that should lay to rest any doubts about the capabilities of handguns for long-range competitions, for sure.
I'll just use an example. If you have a custom or just a really accurate specialty pistol with a good optic on it, 14 power above, most of our guns are muzzle braked and with a rifle scope on them. You need 14, 15 power as a minimum to be able to see the bullseye accurately, because you're looking at 500 yards. Then we have wind flags out. Try to read the wind, watch mirage run through, and place your shots. Person will do much better than their initial impression when they sit down to try that. It's shooting groups just like we do it at load work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another good point, is that the barrier to entry is really low. I mean, as far as just going to learn and have a good time, I know a lot of the competitors that go to MOA, and they're some of the same ones that I interact with through HHI and also have been to Y-Shot and HHC with. Fantastic guys, and like the most of the rest of this community, always willing to help, give advice, and be learned from, and also humble, is what I found.
Yes, everybody there will be helpful. And the game evolved. If you study modern target shooting in F-class or the precision rifle series or whatever, that at 500 yard is more of a precision game, but it's the smaller cartridges, the 6-dashers, 6BRs, just about anything a person has will work at 500. As you stretch the distance to 750, the gremlins come out. The wind starts to affect more. If you're running a smaller cartridge, it starts to run out of steam, so you get more bullet drift.
Gotcha.
And at 1,000 yards is becomes the domain of the bigger cartridges. 6.5 284 is a very popular cartridge for the 1,000-yard range. We do require a person to shoot the same gun through at all 3 distances, but there's no one cartridge or gun really that would has the advantage over the other one.
Gotcha.
As I'll use an analogy that in boxing, the glamour division is the heavyweights. But the best boxers yeah. really are the lightweights and middleweights. So at the MOA shoot, the big 18-inch guns are what we call our heavy gun class. The 18-inch barrel, if you would take... I'll just an XP 100, put 18 inches of bull barrel on it and a muzzle brake, you'll come in under our 16 pound weight limit. Put a big optic on it. That's the glamour division. But a person who can run a 15 inch barrel, 8 or 10 pound gun, is not at a competitive disadvantage historically there to that. So we use a lot of the center grip 17, 18 inch hunting caliber guns that people use. I'm very competitive in the heavy gun category there.
Interesting. Just to clarify for me, at the three distances, everybody shoots all three distances, correct?
Correct, yeah. Our entry system is based on the kind of gun that you have, and it's a three-day event. The first day, we shoot 500 with what you got. The second day, we'll shoot 750, weather permitting. And the third day, we'll move on to the 1,000. A person could come and shoot a gun through as a single division, one, two, or three guns, wherever you want to bring.
Oh, I see. You can enter in multiple divisions. And the winners, you know, you have a winner in each division. And so do you just do the aggregate or the average of the size groups at each range? How do you score?
We score the aggregate of three groups, scored like heats in a race. And we seat the 6, 8, 10 competitors. So what we need, divide it out into a couple of heats. Your aggregate of three groups in that heat will advance to the six-person final, some out of each heat. And then the final is one five-shot group, winner take all. Our prize is a really nicely engraved rock. So you get a rock from Sundance, and we do recognize the single small group in qualifiers. We have a prize for that because whether a person advances on or not, we reward and acknowledge remarkable marksmanship.
That's really neat. I've seen those rocks. I mean, you say really nicely engraved rock. I mean, it's cool. It's like a water cut or laser cut rock that stands up like a trophy. It's a really unique and cool thing to be able to put on your shelf.
Unique.
Yeah. I think that's a really, really clever. So going to the guns that you see there, I know you've already talked a lot about those, but what, you know, MOAs, the Freedom Arms, the Encores, Contenders, and XBs, the custom bolt gun specialty pistols, what are typically, you know, if someone calls you and says, I'm going to build or bring or buy a gun to bring to MOA, what are some of the pieces of advice you give them that say you need to make sure that your gun has this?
What someone should bring or look at for a firearm is any medium, smaller medium powered 6mm, 6.5, the Creedmoor Dasher, the big gun 6.5 284, anything that really will reach the distance. If you can get 2,500 feet a second out of your firearm, one of the misconceptions is with a short barrel you can't get performance, but it's been proven historically that, you know, we know, especially pistol shooters, you can get 90% of rifle velocity safely out of a 15-inch barrel. And anything that's accurate and will carry 500, there's no particular, you know, magical answer.
Sure. But you're talking about, okay, so, I mean, when you're, you know, just the basics of setting up a bench rest gun, you know, for the newbies about it, you're going to, you know, pay particular attention to your trigger, make sure that you have a quality and well-adjusted trigger that you're used to. The muzzle brake, I think, is one of those things that's like a very important part, and they're not all muzzle brakes are created equally.
The muzzle brakes that most of the competitors tend to use are either a Holland radial from Darrell Holland, tends to work very, very well on large cartridges, 6.5 or Creedmoor size and bigger. The brakes from Harrell's Precision work really, really good on the smaller cartridges, as our experience. And yes, not all muzzle brakes are created equal. You know, it's keeping getting scope-eyed and things.
Right, and to prevent your gun from jumping as much. That's a good point in that some muzzle brakes actually require a bigger cartridge to become, you know, as effective as they can be.
I'll just use our heavy gun category because the cartridges tend to be bigger. Our gun weight is 16 pounds. So if you get a firearm that weighs 10 or 12 pounds with the big optic on it, the mass of the gun does a lot to helping recoil, and a good break, large hollinge radial or a large Harrell on the front of it, the guns will only move 2 or 3 inches in full recoil, say as a rear grip. A pretty standard setup in the rear grip is with commercially available products, McMillan rear grip stock, XP100 action, any of the good manufacturers, select match barrels. If you go down the firing line, the product list would read Krieger, Bartline, Brock, Schillen, just the whole myriad of manufacturers represented. We use dual triggers, or now that they're not available, trigger techs. And the few people who are shooting center grips, you know, run a factory trigger improved, or there's a couple of custom trigger manufacturers for those. Then you have the whole package where you have light recoil delivered to you and cartridges capable of reaching the distance.
Right. What are the types of scopes you see the most of?
Most scopes, would just say, once again, the whole list of manufacturers. Citron has been a very good sponsor of that shoot. We have a lot of Citron scopes used there.
That's great.
The Citron scopes are about 8 ounces heavier than a comparable optic in a Leopold or a Vortex. So light gun, they tend to be more Leopold than Vortex, just because of the total weight of the gun has to be less. Night force scopes, just quality optics is a key ingredient. All manufacturers are represented.
So as far as, I know y'all are shooting off the bench, as far as rests are concerned, I know different classes have different requirements for those rests. So as far as rests, bags, bipods, what do you see in that kind of equipment?
The rests that we use for, that the competitors bring for light gun and heavy gun are everything from the fantastic SEP rest down to homemade versions, as long as a person is comfortable with it and it's steady. We just ask, you know, when your gun's sitting in rest, a person, you know, can't lift it out of there readily. But the commercial rests that by Caldwell represent themselves really well. We have seen with the hunter class, as we've put it in 3 years ago, the people using a conventional bipod from Harris Engineering or some of the more expensive ones, when we get down to group size, actually, they're not significantly worse. That people can run a, you know, for hunting situations, the field, you know, that your ability to place a bullet using a bipod and accurately get your first round in. Well, we've shown at our match that you can accurately get many rounds in repeatedly off a bipod.
It just goes to show, Dan, you know, that I always say, you can't buy trigger time, and that's what makes you good.
Practice. This is
right.
This is
exactly
all forms of shooting that a person gets to do, whether it be at steel. You'd mentioned ITMSA in the early days was 40 or 50 rounds or 200 rounds at the end of the day at a fixed target at a fixed distance. How is that not going to help you be a better handgun shooter? Trigger time.
Absolutely.
Our match takes trigger time to, it's kind of an extreme distance, but it all helps. Your ability to read wind and mirage becomes really paramount, as in all long range shooting.
Yeah, and I've found out there's probably no place better to learn that than Wyoming.
I'm not as good a mirage reader as I get credit for being.
Well, you should just take it, Dan. You deserve it. So, this may be moot since you have 5 minutes to make five shots. But do y'all have requirements about single loading or magazines?
There's no requirement with a single loader magazine, but we do have when you're your five shots per record, you only bring five, put five up on the bench. So if you're single shot, that makes it plainly visible, you know, for everybody that there were only five. You didn't take an extra shot or something like that.
Gotcha.
In order to get them on.
That makes sense. Do you have a spotter per shooter?
Ideally, we have a spotter per shooter. You can, you know, pick them up from the people or bring your person. Your spotter is able to coach here.
Right.
So the coaching is a big portion, you know, that, you know, the wind's in or look at this or do things. Myself, even to the point that, hey, Dan, you might want to shoot the right target, you know.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah, we all make mistakes. And within that, people are reluctant as a general thing to come try something where they don't believe they'll do any good. We found at the MOA shoot, once you get there, everybody can shoot. Everybody has a background that will help transfer to good results there. And we all come in somewhere between first and last. Unfortunately, we like first better, but we learn more when we don't come in first.
Absolutely.
They're all better learning experiences.
That's so true. And I tell you what, I am not a competitive person by nature. I've never enjoyed that kind of deal. It's just how I was made. But I do always try to beat myself. And that was always my mindset going into a competition, is that I just want to learn and improve. And the only person I'm trying to beat is myself yesterday.
We have some very experienced handgun hunters that attend this shoot. Typically, you know, most handgun shots, handgun hunting in America, is under 100 yards as a revolver. In the West, we tend to shoot a lot longer distances than that, and we've evolved into the single-shot pistols. SSK hand cannon was my first real handgun hunting gun. The handgun hunters have participated in the MOA over the years, they've also refined their target shooting skills, their loading, and improved their distance hunting too.
Right.
From, you know, proving into confidence, hey, I can make that shot, and it is responsible for me to make that shot.
Absolutely. I mean, if you get the confidence to shoot at 500, then 100 moves a lot closer.
Myself, I shoot a 6BRX, so very similar to the Dasher, in the hunter class competition off of Sandbags. My hunting the last several times at Pronghorn in Wyoming has been that specific firearm and shooting off a backpack. I know I've learned from the competition that I can very accurately place the first shot, and that's helped me with Pronghorn Antelope at some pretty substantial distances over the last few years.
That just goes to show, I mean, I can't say enough about the fact that there is no replacement for getting together as a community to engage in these activities. You don't, no matter how much experience you have, you can always learn something. And I have found that there's also just this, you know, it's a community vibe of people just wanting to help each other. It's all good natured, and it's a lot of fun. So moving on, you said it's held in Sundance, Wyoming. Can you say what, besides, we talked about the guns, the ammo, obviously the rests and all your accoutrement for the actual shooting part, what are some other considerations people need to think about specifically regarding what they need to bring with them if they come to the shoot?
Bring your gear, 100 rounds of ammo. We do have the opportunity, you know, to shoot prairie dogs at a couple of places there. Bring something like that. Some shade. Wyoming weather is totally unpredictable. So we jokingly say, you know, bring an umbrella for some shade and bring your winter coat, because you might need that. It's only June.
You're right. And other things, you know, so when I was out in Wyoming for the Y shot, I found, you know, I didn't have a boonie hat. I wish I would have had a boonie hat. You definitely need sunscreen. I suggest a light long sleeve shirt, because like you said, even on those hot days and people who don't live in a windy place don't consider windburn, and windburn is rough. And if, especially over a 3-day shoot, you know, by that third day, if you haven't adequately prepared and protected yourself from all the elements out there, you're going to be hurting, and it's not going to be fun, and you will have a hard time concentrating on your shooting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've all seen and experienced that. You got to take care of yourself, you know, hearing and eye protection.
Yeah.
Especially we're in close quarters. We have muzzle brakes. You know, there's a lot of material loose.
So do you need to bring any binoculars, spotting scope, any of that stuff?
It's definitely, Ryan. We're looking at a minimum distance of 500, or a quality spotting scope, if you have one, is a must. You won't be able to see your impacts, but you'll be able to read the mirage and watch the wind flags in it. If a person has come, now that we use the electronic scoring, back in traditionally, if physically had a target, we pulled it down, measured it, marked it, put it back up. It was time consuming and was accurate, but took a while. We've gone over the last few years, converted to the shot marker target system. We scored electronically. It'll either transmit back to your phone, or if a person has their own tablet, they can bring and link to the local area network on the Wi-Fi and record all your scores. What we do, we use whatever the electronic system says is regarded as the official measurement. The shot marker targets came out of F-class shooting and use audio sensors mounted on the four corners of the target to measure the sonic impact of the bullet passing through the target. They're accurate within a millimeter.
Wow.
It's pretty hard with a conventional caliper to measure, you know, a paper target and a bullet hole that close.
Wow, that is wild. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, accurate within a millimeter.
Yeah, fascinating. And that, yeah, like you said, boy, does that save you guys a lot of time riding out there to get targets.
We do miss, you know, when you score, you'd have a couple people sit down range and you know, we'd cease fire, go out and get the target session. And it's like working at the pits in any target shoot, the socialization that occurs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you're the crew working, it's irreplaceable, though.
That's true. I do understand missing that for sure. So what about, do you provide water or food or any of that stuff, or people need to bring that as well?
Bring your own drinking water and snack. Traditionally, we have a barbecue on Friday nights included in your match. The match fee is per category. It's $90 for your first category, $70 for each additional. Our prices have not gone up in years. We're trying to resist inflation. And if we cover the match expenses out of the collective pool, and that's really all we're trying to accomplish financially, the $40 for ladies or children. We do allow children over the 10 and older to participate, you know, as long as they have good firearms handling skills, like they're anywhere. We have had competitors as young as 12. And as old as like 80 years old. So everybody shoots together. We have a good time with that. Ladies have been very well represented at the winner's circle.
I imagine. Best kept secret in shooting is that ladies are generally better than the guys, naturally.
Yeah.
They don't have the ego involved, you know?
I've heard that, you know, and people keep training. Teaching people to shoot, it's much easier to teach a lady because there's a couple of mental things you don't have to get out of the way.
That's right. When that's one of the things that I did when I was in the military, and I always found it much easier. Ladies took hold of it, and I think that's great. And my wife is also a good example of that. Okay, so this moving on to, you got the fee down. That's awesome. I would, you know, I know people appreciate you holding it down from inflation. But don't sell you guys short, because I know it's worth more than what you're charging right now. Then it's held the Thursday, starts the Thursday after Father's Day. Is that correct, or the Friday?
Our match is the weekend after Father's Day. We shoot a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday after Father's Day. This year, it's the 20th, 21st, 22nd of June of 2024.
Okay. And where is Sundance in relation to Gillette?
Sundance is in the northeast corner of Wyoming. Sits on Interstate 90. We're on the western edge of the Black Hills of South Dakota, and it's equidistant. Sundance is a town equidistant between Devil's Tower National Monument and Mount Rushmore.
Oh, that's cool.
So one of our things that we, you know, try to the benefit of coming out is you can see some of the great tourist attractions in America there. Mm-hmm. A beautiful scenery. We're 50 miles from where the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally is held. Mm-hmm. There are four local motels in Sundance to stay at, and there's one commercial campground in Sundance, and some of our competitors use Forest Service campground. Our match is actually held at a ranch 10 miles south of Sundance, so we don't have camping directly on the range.
Oh, okay.
We use the other campgrounds that are around there.
Gotcha. Since you are the third competition of the Wyoming Super Series, you go to Newcastle the previous weekend, over to Gillette for Y-Shot during the week, and then up northeast to Sundance for the MOA. And then if you can space it out, you're right there where some of the most famous Western landmarks in the United States, Mount Rushmore, Sturgis, et cetera, are. And so you can kind of make a shooting vacation out of it, if it, as you were.
Helps for the shooters, a shooting vacation.
Yeah.
And the actual matches are, you know, 70 miles apart,
right,
which in Western terms is pretty close.
Oh, I know. I, you know, being from Texas, a lot of people who come to visit, you know, it's just like when they cross in the Texas border, they're like, oh, we're almost there. And no, you're not almost there. You got several hours to go. And I remember when I was in the Navy, I was stationed in Boston, and Massachusetts is only 55 miles wide, roughly from north to south, in its, especially in its western part. And I remember thinking, like, we used to drive further than that to go on dates.
I live in Sweetwater County, Wyoming, mm-hmm. which is the largest geographic county in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And it's like the size of the state of New Hampshire.
Exactly.
The county.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's different.
50 miles to a good ice cream cone.
Yes, sir.
Seriously.
Yeah. I believe it. Okay. So I think we've covered just about everything as far as the details of the match. Can you give, are there any tips that you would give as far as preparation for the match? You know, I live in an area where shooting at 500 to 1,000 yards is not a very easy accomplishment. We don't have ranges that go out that far. And so most of my shooting is limited to, I would say, 200 yards or less. So what tips would you give for people preparing for MOA who don't have access to these long ranges? And then also, do you have any tips for new shooters at MOA?
The advice I'd give someone as a new shooter preparing, if you only have short distance, would be just get a good zero at 200 yards and make sure your gun is accurate and your loads are safe. And if you have any idea the velocity that you're running or whatever, we can run it all off job charts. And my own self, my very first MOA shoot, I brought an SSK hand cannon. That's what I owned, in 309 JDJ. We stopped at the ranch where I grew up, and range findered 500 yards and dialed it up onto or hitting a rock. That was my total preparation. I knew that the gun shot well and they held up at distance. And so I would say that kind of total preparation would be all the person would need. Don't over prepare, you'll be okay.
That is really good advice, Dan. And I really like that, because it's not an equipment race. It's a low pressure competition where you're challenging yourself. And so don't let the fear of being underprepared prevent you from going.
Yeah. If a person's under calibered or under optic or that, you'll shoot the best of your ability, mm-hmm. and we'll help you out and learn. My personal experience, we were competitive enough with an SSK hand cannon. We're shooting pretty well in days. I looked over everybody's stuff.
Right.
I was fascinated by the heavy guns, the big guns, 18-inch barrel. I'd never seen anything like that. It's actually how we found out about the shoot. Was an article that Mark Hampton had done, an American handgunner, had a picture of a gun and a stock that we'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So we contacted Richard Merch at MOA and showed up a month later, big-eyed as anybody.
That's great.
All my overtime went to the gunsmith the next winter.
No joke. Right. Yes. Okay. So can you tell me how people find out about MOA and where they can go to find you?
A person could find it off of the Facebook group we advertise in the XP and Herd group, but MOA long range shoot, all is one word, .com is our website. And all our contact information is on there on how to find us and get to the shoot and do that.
Folks, I recommend that you check this out. Make the trip. It's worth it. Fantastic people. Dan, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
I certainly enjoyed meeting you the time we did. And I appreciate all the work you've done with the Handgun Hunters International and doing that. I hope to be able to write an article someday for your magazine.
Oh, Dan, I'll print whatever you send me. And I mean that. Absolutely. All righty, buddy. Bye. Thanks again. Okay, I hope you've listened to all three episodes about these competitions in Wyoming. And if you have, I would just recommend that you recognize the thread of kind, quality people putting on fantastic opportunities for handgun hunters to go test their skills against themselves, learn from fantastically kind and humble people, and with lots of experience, see all kinds of cool country, see cool gear, be able to learn new skills. I just can't recommend highly enough that you should go to these shoots. Again, you can check out the MOA shoot at MOALongRangeShoot.com. I'll put that in the show notes. And please, if you go to these shoots, reach out to us and let us know your experience at them, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be fantastic and you will just have a great time. Okay, thank you all so much for listening to the Shotgun Sportsman. This podcast is the first and currently, to my knowledge, the only podcast dedicated to handgun hunting, which helps further the mission of Handgun Hunters International to support and grow the handgun hunting community. You can help us do that by liking and subscribing to this episode. If you're listening to it somewhere, you can comment. You can do that as well. Thank you all so very much again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. This podcast is produced by Handgun Hunters International. HHI is the only organization dedicated solely to supporting and growing the sport of handgun hunting. Membership gets you access to our great, well-moderated forum where friendly handgun hunters of all experience levels share stories and information from folks that have actual experience in our sport. We also host giveaways to our members of guns, gear, and ammo every month, and each prize is worth several times what membership costs. In addition to this podcast, we publish a free digital magazine, The Six Gunner, which is written exclusively by HHI members. If you are a handgun hunter or support handgun hunting in any way, you need to be a member of HHI. Join today at HandgunHuntersInternational.com. Again, if you have any questions on how to get started in handgun hunting, please reach out to me at Ryan@HandgunHuntersInternational.com. If you think we deserve it, please leave us a 5-star review, and don't forget to follow Handgun Hunters International on social media at @HandgunHuntersInt. God bless and good hunting.